The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. It's a great gift, to be here, to be part of AA today, to be sober. I'd like to thank the group for asking me to speak. I do want to be honest. I'm extremely nervous. I have, thank you. I have a great need for approval. It borders on pathological. And, my entire life. And I know right now, I have the primary purpose of helping the newcomer. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to give me peace of mind, not this approval, which is a bottomless pit. So I've been sober 2.5 years. I have a home group, I have a sponsor, I have sponsees, and it's awesome. Experience strength and hope. In the beginning and till this day, I just felt that there was something wasn't right, something was not right with me and my place in the world. And I wanted to connect desperately, and I didn't know how to. And I developed shortcuts, long before I touched alcohol. I think, I wanted to connect so badly that I wanted to be the center of attention. And if I didn't get that, then you wouldn't see me. I would isolate. This was when I was a child. And I only knew these extremes. I didn't know anything else in between. I didn't have the tools to be eye to eye with the rest of the world. And I didn't have the language to talk about it. So I had these shortcuts of acting out and isolating and stealing and lying, and it never felt good. And I always wanted out of it, but I didn't have a solution. And thus came the ultimate shortcut, which was alcohol. And that was my solution after 18 years of scratching my head. It was my first day of college. As soon as my parents left, I drank and I used other dry goods for the first time immediately. And I got a host of great friends that I even keep in touch with till today. That self-centered fear, it was gone. It was gone for the first time in my life. And I could be comfortable in my own skin. I'll just tell you one example. I was walking on the street with my friends, and I was profoundly drunk. And I saw this girl across the street, and I said, are you Jewish? Will you marry me? And we dated for 3 months, it worked. This worked, And throughout college, I continued to take the shortcuts and manipulating, academia and, barely putting any effort into the classes I wasn't interested in. And I was devastated when they handed me the diploma and said, you have to go on your merry way. I did not want to leave. I actually took an extra year. I was one of those super seniors. I did not want to go. But that whole time, alcohol and drugs, with that fear and the procrastination, the alcohol, it was always on the surface, and I always wanted to be a better person. But as long as I was drinking, there was just no way out. So I graduated, and drinking immediately became a necessity where it once was a luxury. And I was in complete denial of my responsibilities now as an adult. And because of that, I began to dominate and depend on others, family and friends. And through that, I found the rooms when I was 25, which was 12 years ago. And I experienced that pink cloud the first year and a half, and it was great. And I did not find it necessary to enlarge my spiritual life. I not because I was defiant. I just thought this was okay. Like, this was as good as it's going to get, and no problem. Despite my complete unmanageability that entire time of still lying and stealing. But I was sober, and then that pink cloud, it went away. And I was left with no tools, no higher power. And I can only sum up for the next 10 years. I can't really get into detail. I have 5 minutes left. It was incomprehensible, the moralization. My alcoholism took me to places that I never thought I could never fathom. And while in AA, while having the self-knowledge and reading the book a million times and not doing the work, but having a lot of sponsors, and I don't know why. I'm here today. I'm sober, and I'm not. I don't question it. I this is the path that I took. But I got into enough pain, and I was willing to do the work. Finally, thank God. I always wanted to. I wasn't ready. And through the inventory, what was revealed to me was that no human had the power to get me drunk, and no human has the power to keep me sober. And I was walking around with that contradiction for 10 years. I made humans both the problem and the solution. And there's, with that, there's no way of being eye to eye with you. And I got through the work, and I realized that the problem is not you. It's my attitude and outlook upon life. And the solution is asking God to restore me to sanity so I can be with my fellows. And that, that fifth step, it brought me here. It brought me back to you. And the ninth step keeps me walking hand in hand with you. And so I can stay here and ask God to, access this higher power so I can stay here. And then came the true miracle, which is, for me, the 12th step. I like the person that I am when I'm helping others. And I realized that this is not the person that I always wanted to be. This is actually the person that I've always been. I just could not access it, because it was what, between me and a true partnership with another human being, was alcohol and resentment and self-pity. Self-pity ruins me, and I still deal with it today. But every day I have a way out, and that's helping others. And I was on the phone with my sponsor the other day, and we were reading the book, and he said, single-handedly, the most important thing that you'll ever do the rest of your life is help another alcoholic. And if you had told me that a year ago, it would have made me nauseous. And really, I'm full of gratitude. I felt the rush of gratitude when he told me that over the phone. I felt it, and I want that. And no matter what happens in my life, the self-pity, which always is going to, it dominates me. I have this tool of love. And immediately when I began sponsoring, my dark past became my greatest possession, because that self-hatred that I endured for years was flipped over and recycled into compassion for others. And it's amazing. And it's free for you. If you're in enough pain and you're willing, to accept spiritual help, you got it. I really thought I was that one unique alcoholic that couldn't get this, and it's not true. I thought that I was this really bad person, and I'm not. I was just a sick person who was relying on self. And I'm just trying my best. Thank you. I'm just trying my best to be here, and take this inventory, this daily inventory, which is, it's so new to me, and this, self-awareness has never been my problem. I've gone to therapy for years, and it didn't really get me anywhere, but giving it over to God, it's where it's at, and I have absolutely, no idea what lies ahead. I still live with the consequences of self for over 10 years, or 37 years, the consequences of self-reliance. I'm still dealing with them today, and it's okay. You know, that's what the steps have told me, that I'm okay, that I've always been okay. Even when I was that little kid who thought there was something inherently wrong, I was okay then, I'm okay now, and I'll be okay tomorrow. I really will. I sincerely believe that, and thank you, AA, for giving me my sobriety.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Claudia.
Hi, I'm Claudia. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to start with my stats because I know those. So I got sober October 29, 2011. My sponsor is Maria S. My Atlantic group, my home group is Atlantic Group. And I'm working step 8. I've gone through all 12. And the reason why it's important for me to say that is because this program works. I get continuous sobriety from it. And that is kind of the point of me being in this program, at least, is to get continuous sobriety. And I need a sponsor. I need someone who's going to hold me accountable, who has experience working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, who's going to take me through the big book, and who's going to show me how to live this life. I need a home group, because when I was new, I needed it, because I needed somewhere that I had a commitment, that I had to show up every week. It was a social obligation, really, for me in the beginning to, like, be there. And now, with a little more time, it's important for me to be there every week because the newcomer sees that we are consistent, we are reliable, we do what we say we're going to do, and that helps other people get sober. I'm supposed to be – we hold these meetings so that newcomers can find us. And so that's why it's so important for me to have a home group now. And then I always do this work. I'm always doing this work. This is a 12-step program. That's how it's been explained to me. And the way that I've worked the 12 steps is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So with that out of the way, I started drinking when I was 14. I was pretty young, but also not as young as some. And it was my first drink was like that, you know, you've heard of it maybe or you haven't. It was that moment of like, yeah, this is exactly how I want to live the rest of my life. In any capacity, just with some form of alcohol in my body. Like, I don't really care what it takes to do that, but, like, I need this from now until forever. And then after that, it was always sort of like, in 15 minutes, I'll feel that way again. In 10 minutes, just a little more, and I'll have that relief again. But I never really completely got that, like, absolute breath of fresh air after that first drink, and I chased that through the remainder of my drinking. And I didn't really have, like, much of a progression in terms of, like, I drank a little bit and then I started drinking. I just always was drinking a lot. Like, I just pretty much was doing it as much as I could. Very quickly started stealing money from my mom's wallet when she was asleep, and my sister's piggy bank before she got home from school. And, you know, when I was 16, my parents were like, you have a problem, so I went to the psych ward, and they were like, you probably shouldn't do the things that you're doing. Drugs are a part of my story, but singleness of purpose. And so they were like, you should stay sober, so I tried, and for a while, like, I was able to, like, 2 months, like, I didn't really do much, I didn't do anything, actually, but one day, someone said, do you want some, and I said, yes. It was just that simple. Like, we have no defense against the first drink. I didn't have any idea what I was dealing with. And then when I was 17, I was hospitalized again. And the same thing happened. They said, maybe you shouldn't be doing these things that you're doing. And I said, okay. And then I did it anyways. After a while, that moment happened that I said yes. There was no thought about it. It was just like the most natural thing in the world. Why wouldn't I be living my life this way? I'm miserable when I don't have this solution. So my high school asked me to graduate or leave, so I graduated a year early. Spent that year pretty much doing nothing. I worked at Jamba Juice. Any money that I made went into my lifestyle. I was kicked out a few times from my mom's house, had to go live with my dad in the suburbs. I mean, it was, you know, it was challenging. And then I went away to school, and I didn't have to pretend anymore. I didn't have to, you know, make excuses for why I wasn't coming home or why my eyes were red or why I smelled like a bar. it didn't matter. So on October 28th, 2011, I tried to kill myself. My every intention was to die. And I didn't, you know, clearly. But one of the things that the doctor said was that, I couldn't walk and I couldn't, talk. I couldn't hold my eyes open for more than 30 seconds. So they told my parents that I'd probably need care for the rest of my life, that I would probably never do anything normal ever again. I would never really hold a job. I would never have a normal life. And, I'm like relatively normal today, I think. Like, it's okay. But those are all things that did actually come out of that. And so, you know, every indication was A, that I was supposed to die, and then B, that I was supposed to be some sort of impairment for the rest of my life. And that was like my first inkling that maybe there was something out there that was looking out for me. Because I'm not supposed to be okay. And, you know, like, also, if you're like, well, that didn't happen to me, you don't need that extreme in order to be able to get sober. I do want to put that out there. And also that I, like, was not a blackout drinker. I blacked out, like, once in my entire drinking career. That was nerve-wracking for me because I was like, I wasn't a blackout drinker. Am I not an alcoholic? No, I just wasn't a blackout drinker. So that, I was in a ICU for 3 days, and then I was in the psych ward for 2.5 weeks, and then I was sent to rehab for 2.5 months. And by the time I got out, I had sort of had a very vague understanding of what Alcoholics Anonymous was, and what alcoholism was, and I had enough information to know that maybe it was a good idea for me to stay sober. So my roommate, from rehab was like, why don't you come to a meeting with me? And I said, sure, I'll go with you. So I went to a meeting with her. She was like, why don't you get the same sponsor as me? That would be like so much fun. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. Thankfully, this woman was like a person who knew this deal and was like going to work it with me in the way that I needed to be worked with, which was like not taking any of my stuff. And, you know, the first thing that she told me was, we're going to meet once a week. We're going to read the big book. Here are these worksheets. Not everybody does worksheets. Some people do, some people don't. I've had sponsors who do and don't. It's not like a requirement. And you are going to have your work done. And if you don't have your work done when we meet, we're not meeting on the big book. Because I can't do this for you. And for my whole life, like up until that point, like people had been saving me. People had been like saving me from myself and like doing the thing for me and like making it happen. And this is the first person who was like, no, like I really, you have to do this yourself. Like this is, you are the only person who can get you sober. And also like this other thing that's called God. And so I met with her once a week. She taught me what a home group was. She taught me about the big book. We read it together. And I worked the 12 steps. I worked a 4-step. I realized that like, yeah, all those things that had happened, like I definitely had a part in. I was able to do a 6-step and a 7-step. I started sponsoring other women. And I became a member of AA. And then I wasn't so much anymore. Things were really good. So I stopped going as much. I stopped caring as much. And that hurt a lot. And so I moved to New York. And I walked into the Atlantic Group Wednesday night meeting, and I saw a friend from Chicago, that's where I got sober, in the meeting, and I realized that I was not doing this thing anymore. I was a person who needed help again, and so I had to say to people, yeah, like I moved here because I was dying of untreated alcoholism again, and I didn't know what to do. So I had to work that from the ground up. I had to go back into meetings and say, hi, I'm Claudia, I'm an alcoholic, can I get your phone number, can I call you? I had to meet once a week with my sponsor and go through the big book again. I had to do all those things that I had to do when I was a newcomer in order to be able to lay that foundation again. And like, I had this amazing higher power walking through all of that with me that entire time, that even in those moments when I felt like, this isn't okay, I'm not okay, I'm not gonna make it, this isn't, I don't know how I'm ever gonna stay sober, I did. And in those moments, it was, can you please just help me get through this? Can you please just show me that it's going to be okay? And there were times when, like, I had to put down the phone and just go to sleep because that was what I needed. I just had to go to sleep and wake up the next day sober again. And that was okay. That was enough. But in this group, like, it's amazing because, you know, I was able to do all that work again and then become a person that I wanted to be again. You know, I had my 24th birthday last week, which was like awesome. And I hung out with my mom all day. And you know what my mom said to me? She said, I enjoy you. I enjoy you. My mom kicked me out, like, multiple times when I was an act of alcoholism. Like, because she, like, didn't want me around because she just couldn't watch me anymore. She enjoys me. Like, what more can you ask for, really? And, you know, Mother's Day, like, got to spend with her and my sister, who I now live with, who also enjoys me and who trusts me in her home. These are all things that are, like, you know, maybe not huge on a really large scale of, like, money and, like, jobs and everything like that, but those are the things that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, the ability to show up, to be a person that my family wants to be around, to enjoy them, and also that I, like, don't steal money from their wallets anymore. So, thank you, and have a good night.
And our main speaker tonight is Colin.
I can take it anyway. Thanks. Thanks. My name is Colin. I'm an alcoholic. And I don't really get that nervous speaking because I do it all the time, but also because I always do a third step before I speak, you know, whenever I speak anywhere. And this way, it's at least I know it's not me, and hopefully not too much of my character defects trying to control what I say and the reaction, especially since you can't control it anyway, you know. And but today I had to pick up my mother. My brother and sister, my mother's sick. She had to go to the hospital today. So they called me and said, could you pick up mom? So I had a bunch of stuff I had to do, but I said, yeah, I could pick her up. And I picked her up and got her home. And that's a simple thing that normal people do all the time. But I was, when I was drinking, I was the not, I was the missing family member. I wasn't that one of the responsible people in the family, you know what I mean? And today, I'm another member of my family. I'm not the savior of my family, which is what I would have thought for a couple of years in early sobriety. Where I was like, oh yeah, I'm sober now and I'm here and I'm always available. It's like, right size, you know what I mean? And very hard for me, you know, very hard for me. And, to be a worker among workers, you know? And, I was thinking about it today. I just, cause I was talking to my nephew the other day. He's like 17, doesn't drink yet, but he's got all the personality traits I had. Like, when I was a kid, before I started drinking, I discovered, like, in school, first of all, I hated everything that wasn't pleasure centered. You know what I mean? Like, I liked candy when I was little, and I would eat all the candy more than anybody, whatever, you know, just till my stomach hurt. I loved playing basketball. I would cut school just to play basketball. Then when I was funny, I was funny in school. It was like, I do it until I get thrown out of class. And, you know, I was just always, I didn't want to do any work. I hated school. I hated learning how to fix, like when people were fixing, cars. And I was just like, nah, nah, nah. Like, I always felt like, let's cut to the party, you know. Let's cut out this nonsense and get to the good times. Like, that's what I wanted. Even as a kid, I watched commercials and they're drinking beer or smoking cigarettes. And I was like, yeah, that's the life, you know. Just, that was my values, you know. My values was the party, and that's all I wanted. That was my first love, really, was drinking. My first love was drinking. And I remember when I started smoking cigarettes, drinking, doing drugs, right away I was like, I love this. And for the first few years, I was the guy. I probably started when I was about 14, 13. But I was suddenly because I was already looking for action, you know what I mean? Like, I was bored by everything. And then suddenly, I found, like, something where people identified, like, that's the guy. If you want to cut school, if you want to go somewhere, if you want to go party, he's the guy that'll try to do it with you. Like, he doesn't, you know what I mean? And I became like I'm sure like most of you. I was that alcoholic that just, you know, I was started out as like a fun person who doesn't love when you're 15, somebody who's always ready to, you know, steal beer or go do something funny, you know. But, and I was a popular person because of it. By the time I was 17, the people that were going to be like normal adults just started, you know, like in high school, they'd just be like, yeah, what's with that guy, you know, like, they would just kind of be like a little removed. And even the people I partied with were kind of like, oh yeah, like they would sort of, they would, it was almost like a disrespectful kind of like laughter, like, oh yeah, he's that guy, you know. So it was, I was like, and I sort of felt it, but not really, you know, just 17, you don't really know what's going on. And then by the time I was 19, it was all going downhill, you know. I was the person that was just, I'd get jobs, like I'd sober up, I'd get jobs, I'd, you know, I'd work as bartender, waiter, and be very charming. I'd walk in, dress nice, sober, just talk to the owner, and they'd hire me, you know. I'd walk all up 2nd Avenue, 3rd Avenue. I lived in Brooklyn, but I always wanted to live on the Upper East Side. Back to like the early 80s, you know, late 70s, early 80s, so I wanted to be on the Upper East Side. So I'd walk up 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue, get all these jobs, because you're walking 30 places, and I'd get a job eventually, and I'd give a good line, you know. And then after a few weeks, it would happen, you know. And even if I started working at 5 at night, I'd come in a little messed up one day, and then a little, you know, just always, something always went wrong by the end of my shift. If I drank during my shift, I already knew that I had to make sure when I was drinking, nothing else was going to happen that I had to be responsible for the rest of that day, you know. But usually I would wait until after I got off work, you know, because I was working at night. And but then if I drank during my shift, like late in the shift, by the time the shift ended, I'd be wasted. Because when I drank, I would always speed up. Like I could never be like with my car. I remember one of my cousins, and they were all real drinkers, you know. And I remember them going, you just have to slow down as you start drinking more and more, because they were, most of them were normal drinkers or heavy drinkers, but they would have a couple of quick ones and then they'd slow down. And then it starts slowing down. And I was just the opposite. I would just keep picking up faster and faster until I blacked out. And I started waking up, you know. I lived on the Lower East Side at the time. I had an apartment and I was waking up and, in downtown at Center Street, you know, locked up for, you know, I didn't know why, you know, just reading these desk appearance tickets and not remembering anything that happened, and, you know, losing jobs because of that, because 2 days had passed, you know. And I'd wake up in the street. I'd wake up in the median on the BQE. And talk about a God moment. My mother was going out with my brothers and sisters, like 9 in the morning, to some family thing. They never went out to Long Island. They were going out from Brooklyn, Long Island. And she goes, that's Colin. And my grandmother's in the car, and my mother went all around searching for me. And they were like, it wasn't him, but it was me. And I really, you know. And I told her that, like, I admitted that to her, like, in 5 years of sobriety, I go, that was me. And she almost started crying, because it horrified her to see her son on the side of the road, like, 9 in the morning on a Sunday morning. You know, we didn't even live around there. It was in Williamsburg at the time. And it was a weird thing that she happened to see that. It broke, you know, it was powerful for her, you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, because she just prayed for me to get sober the whole time. And then I kept losing jobs. I kept losing apartments. My whole body was cut, because I used to eat a lot of, like, speed back in those days to keep awake so I wouldn't black out. And so my whole body was covered in sores. Like, I got this weird skin disease. So, like, my legs and arms were covered in sores. They just call them wine sores and stuff, you know? And I'd wake up in the Bowery. I was 21, waking up in the Bowery when the Bowery was all, you know, guys, Bowery guys. And I'd go to, like, those, fall asleep in those little, you know, netting rooms, you know, rooms for rent. And just, I'd wake up and just, you know, whatever. New York in those days, there was a lot of places you could end up like that. You know, now I don't know where you would go. But, I mean, back then, St. Mark's, there was a lot of places, you know. And it was incomprehensible demoralization, but I never wanted to give up my greatest love, which is drinking. You know what I mean? And I get it. I get it to this day. I have friends that died because they couldn't do it, because I loved it. Even though it was ruining my life, the feeling of going in that bar and just the possibilities, even though it always ended up where you didn't know, just the open possibility, like, this night's going to be something, you know. And the first couple where I'm like, all right, you know what I mean? Laughing, people like you, the first couple, you know what I mean? And then just the haze of the rest of the time, just the horror, you know? And I just couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that God would do this to me. Like, the one thing I did love, and I was going to have to, it looked like I was going to have to give it up, you know? And so finally, I remember the first time I went to a meeting, This guy drove in from Bay Ridge. I lived in Park Slope. This guy drove in 80 blocks to pick me up for a meeting. Young guy named Charlie. And I remember thinking, like, what a loser. This guy's a loser. He's driving in to pick somebody up for his meeting. I thought, what a goody-goody this guy is, you know? Like, I totally judged him. I wasn't, like, grateful. I mean, I remember that was my attitude, you know? I was just like, all right, yeah. And then we drove to the meeting. It was a young people's meeting. I was 24 or something. And I remember just sitting there going, this is where I belong. I heard everybody speak. I go, this is where I belong. This is my tribe, whatever. But there's got to be, this was like, it's like finding out you belonged in hell, you know? It's like, there's got to be another way, you know? This can't be it. I'm really supposed to not drink it my whole life. That's what they're talking about. It's a day at a time, but still, I'm sitting there going, you know, I know where the, you know, I say, what? And they were going to a diner afterwards, and you want to go? No, I don't want to go to a diner. I just took the train home, and, you know, and I drank a little more. I drank some more, and I kept, every time I drank, you know, I would switch, what everybody's done, switch this, drink this, try that. Just don't do the drink water in between. Not everything. I don't want to, even to this day, like when I fantasize about drinking, I'm not like, oh, I wish I could have four drinks. It's like, no, I wish I could drink bottles and bottles of, I wish I could drink just an empty, you know what I mean? Like an empty thing that kept drinking. Like I never even fantasized about drinking like six drinks, you know? And, so I was just an alcoholic, you know? I mean, one of the beautiful things is that I know, like, I belong here. Like, every time I'm in the rooms, you just know, you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, I just know it's where I belong, even though I don't want to be there, you know? And that's, so anyway, I finally got sober. I moved with a friend of mine to the Upper East Side, and we got this little apartment. We're both living in one room, and that's where I got sober. By got sober, I mean I had those days where I was feeling like I was laughing. And I remember once laughing at a meeting on 79th Street Workshop, and this is the old 79th Street Workshop, and just laughing and going, wow, I'm actually laughing. I'm actually happy. Like suddenly I didn't have the fear, you know, of every day waking up, like what did I do and what's going on, and you know what I mean? And I was laughing and I was actually feeling like okay on a daily basis. You know, and it was just this, it was this weird, you know, like that was my first kind of spiritual awakening where I was like, oh, so everything I thought was true is not necessarily true. You can laugh when you're not drinking. You can have good times when you're not drinking. You can talk to people. You can, you know, communicate. You can actually have some fun when you're not drinking. Because I wanted fun. That's what I wanted, but it never turned out that way. But I wanted fun, and now here I was kind of having not the version of fun that I wanted, which was like some mad, you know, demonic, you know, orgy / you know, who knows. But I'm saying, but I was enjoying, like, it was a fantasy world, you know. And one of the reasons it's so funny, because my first sponsor, Red, was here tonight, and he was the guy that showed me, like, here's how you do it. You do service. Get out there. Like, he was going to meetings all the time, and he was our leader of all of us, you know, in our 20s. And he was always, by leader, he would just be like, you do service right now. And we're like, yeah, I want to talk about my feelings. It's like the 80s. You're like, I want to talk about, he's like, yeah, do service and talk about it. And it's like, so it was like a program of action, like get out there and do these things that'll make you feel better, you know? Because a lot of times, I mean, left to my own device, just like when I was a kid, I want you do service. I'll come to the meeting, I'll think, and then we'll all have a spiritual time, you know. But it's like, I don't want to do the, you know what I mean? Greet people. Greeting people is uncomfortable, you know, or setting up, come early, you know what I mean? And so that was a great lesson, because to this day, he's always in the middle of service, you know. And it leads to spiritual awakenings, at least in my opinion, you know. But anyway, so I got sober. So the first few years was gratitude. And a perfect example of service, we went to the 50th anniversary. This is a long time ago. 50th anniversary is in Montreal. And Red, who was looking forward to it, So just more than even us at the time, like this is like this big event, Lois spoke, she was still alive, and he couldn't go because one of our friends made a suicide attempt and he had to stay, and so it ruined his whole trip, but he was doing service even then, missing this like big spiritual trip. So ultimately that was the program more than going to the 50th just celebrate, you know what I mean? And even though we had an amazing time that he missed, but it just, it's those lessons of the end. But anyway, cut to, I'm sober a few years, and just like Claudia was kind of saying, so I started doing well in my life, beyond your wildest dreams, whatever, you know. And, well, it's never beyond my wildest dreams, you know, it's always, but then what happens, I start taking my will back, because I did the steps, but I never really did 6 and 7. Because I was like, 6 and 7, I did them when I did 4 and 5, you know. And 6 and 7, yeah, 6 and 7 are like, they're, you know, they can be amorphous, so they can be vague if you want them to be, you know. And so I was like, yeah, I've done them, I did 4 and 5. But it was a very tricky thing with character defects. Cause I was like, cause when I first did the steps, I looked at it like, I got all my secrets out, you're only as sick as your secrets, I got all my character defects, but it was all drinking character defects. It wasn't like, defects like ego, resentment, fear, and sobriety, and all that stuff, you know what I mean? So it was like, but anyway, long story short, about 5 years in, I have a slip, one day slip, almost die, and I'm in LA, almost dying, I have a slip, go back, crawl on my hands and knees, back to the meetings, you know, 2 years later, another slip, one day, almost die again, then I came back, and I was like, all right, you know, I was away from all the people I had started with. They were, you know, we all kind of scattered. And I still didn't, for a couple of years, I went to meetings religiously, but I still didn't see, like, I didn't see that I needed to do more, in my thing, more step work, more work that was about the levels of my ego and the levels of my resentment. And the levels of my fear and just selfishness, just all the qualities, all the character defects that they talk about. I thought that I quit drinking. You know how hard that was? I quit drinking. You should all feel bad, you know, not you, but everybody outside these rooms should feel grateful that I actually am sitting here sober. I've had so many opportunities. I've had free stuff ever since I got sober. People are throwing free drinks at me or whatever. And so I really had underneath it all a lot of resentment and a lot of ego, and I just wanted more. I was still that alcoholic that wanted more, you know? And so I didn't slip after that, but I had some dry years. And I'm talking about going to meetings dry years too, you know? I wish it was just, I stopped going to meetings, I was dry. No. I'm saying going to meetings, but not doing the work. You know what I mean? Not doing service, you know? Service just showing up. And then after a couple of really bad dry experiences, which I brought on, and I swore, if you talked to me 8 years ago, I would have told you the story how these people did this. Can you believe it? I came from this place of the program, spirituality, and these people did this to me. And I would have just, you know what I mean? I believed it. I was like, I can't believe that people could be like this, but that's what happens when you don't have a program. You know what I mean? But it was all just, I mean, I'm not saying they don't have their parts. I'm just saying that I got to look at my part because everybody else's part, there's nothing I could do about it, it is none of my, you know. And so anyway, I did a lot of amends work. I wrote a lot of letters, and people responded the way they responded. Some people were like, oh, my God, thank you for admitting your part. And other people just used it to, like, mess with me or whatever, and it's fine. You know what I mean? Like it's like they always say, it's not your, you don't deal with the response. But then the past few years, I got back into doing service. I got back into, you know, me and my sponsor back in my life. And then my sponsee, who a couple of years ago came along. And then this guy, once again, it's the actions, talking to him every day, hearing what he has to say, doing things with him. And you start to get back into the reality of what the program is, because what I realized, even though this is going to sound like a lie, to anybody that's new who's like, oh, this is the biggest lie ever. I swear to God, the only, because my whole thing in life was, how do I get high? How can I get high off basketball? How can I get high off cigarettes? And I smoke constantly when I was a little kid, like smoke. Everybody else, like, we had cigarettes, and I wanted more, and then drink and drug, you know, everything, all the sex, anything. How can I get high? And the only thing that ever gets me high is, in sobriety, is doing the work, love and service, doing the work, doing step work. I mean, I've gotten actual physical sensations of being high. You know what I mean? And I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, know what I'm talking about here. Where you actually feel like you feel great. You know, you feel great. And like I said, I had it for the first 5 years and I had it for the last 5 years, you know. But in between, I put myself through a lot of needless suffering because mostly for me, because of 6 and 7, because 6 and 7, I didn't want to give up those. I didn't want to give up lust. I didn't want to give up, you know, mostly lust, but also resentment. But also, you know, you want to say the other one so you look like a civilized person. And no, but I mean, but it is all the other ones too. Ego. I mean, ego connected to, but it's just ego. All that stuff where it's like, this is what I want. I want to try to get high from all this stuff instead of just realizing the answer's right there. You know what I mean? And, so it's been, you know, it's been a beautiful and painful journey so far. And that's it. Thank you very much. Thanks.